Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. After robber barons, in this case copper kings, took over Montana's government, its citizens voted on some of the strictest campaign finance laws in the country. In 1912, they took corporate money out of elections with the Corrupt Practices Act. And then came Citizens United in 2010, almost 100 years later. And that allows corporations to secretly spend freely on political campaigns. And that's where the new documentary Dark Money starts out. Filmmaker Kimberly Reed follows investigative reporter John Adams and his mission to find out who is behind new attack ads against political candidates in Montana. The film is being released as Montana's Democratic Governor Steve Bullock is suing the Trump administration to block it from allowing advocacy groups from disclosing the identities of their donors to the government. So in essence, dark money is becoming darker. Joining us to talk about the new documentary Dark Money is Kimberly Reed, a filmmaker and documentarian. She's director and producer of a number of documentaries, and she's been named one of Filmmaker Magazine's 25 New Faces of Independent Film. And Kimberly joins us in San Francisco. Hi, Kimberly. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Thank you for this documentary. We do so many shows on money and politics, and you do a really great job of connecting the dots. We're also joined by John Adams, investigative journalist and founder of the Montana Free Press, an independent nonprofit news agency providing in-depth Montana news and analysis. And John joins us from Wisconsin. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, and thanks for your incredible reporting. Kimberly, I want to start off with you because this documentary couldn't come out at a better time, given that Montana Governor Steve Bullock is suing the Trump administration to block it from eliminating a mandate that various nonprofit groups disclose the identities of their major donors to the government. And NPR had a piece about this a couple days ago, basically saying that dark money is going to become even darker.
That's right. You know, I've been working on this film since 2012, and yeah, you know, there was really no way to predict precisely where we are here right now. But one thing has been clear the entire time that, you know, ever since the Citizens United ruling, what you see in election cycle after election cycle is the kind of tweaking and honing and professionalization of the use of these dark money groups to hide spending in political campaigns. These folks are just getting better and better at it every time around. And, you know, it was looking grim enough until a couple days ago when this rule change at the IRS was issued by Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, which basically eradicated the paper trail that people will have to follow any of the contributions that go to these dark money groups. No way to predict where we are right now, but I kind of agree that our film is more important than ever because if what we do in the film is just kind of show how the shell game works. We show how you connect those dots. We got lucky in some ways in that we could had some accidental disclosures of evidence, and we had some great whistleblowers, and we actually had a great watchdog press like John Adams, who was following the issue and reporting on it. So we had a way to kind of shine a spotlight on what was going on and to connect those dots, as I said, and that's kind of a unique situation. But being able to do that in kind of this small microcosm of what was going on in Montana is certainly going on in every other state. And as you say, it couldn't be more timely because what we see now is an effort at the federal level with the IRS to stop tracking any of those contributions whatsoever.
And just to let listeners know what's happening here, NPR reports that until now, tax-exempt groups under Section 501C of the tax code have had to identify donors of $5,000 or more on their annual tax returns. While the returns are public, the donor identifications are redacted when the tax returns are made public. And under these new rules, 501C3 charities will still have to identify their most generous donors to the IRS, but the 501c4 social welfare organizations and 501c6 business associations will not. So, John, can you talk about the significance of these changes?
Well, as far as I understand it, these changes right now are proposed changes, and depending on the outcome of the lawsuit that Montana has filed against the IRS, over how they went about making this rule change, you know, I think a little too early to say whether or not this will go into effect. But if it were to go into effect, I think what it would do is make it even more difficult for folks to eventually find out who is funding these dark money groups. And why that's so concerning, especially in today's day and age, is we don't know if these are foreign entities that are meddling in our elections. Our election laws prohibit foreign governments, foreign agents, foreign entities from participating in United States elections. And if even the government doesn't know who the donors are, then it would make it essentially completely seamless for foreign governments, for foreign corporations, or whoever to make donations to these 501c4 groups, who could then play very significant roles in our elections. And so what you have is outside forces having a significant impact on the outcome of our elections, which is extremely un-American.
And Governor Steve Bullock of Montana filed this lawsuit on Tuesday, and he's asking the court to issue a judgment voiding the new policy. It was really amazing to learn about Montana's history of fighting for campaign finance. Now, when Citizens United passed in 2010, or the Supreme Court made the ruling in 2010, saying that corporations can spend freely on political campaigns, that basically struck down any state law with corporate spending bans. And at that time in 2010, 24 states had laws restricting corporate spending before Citizens United, including Ohio, Oklahoma, Texas, and Montana. After Citizens United, only one state, Montana, defended its own law. So, John, tell us a little bit about the history of Montana and why it is a state that has that really fights for campaign finance reform.
Well, Montanans learned early on what kind of impact corporate influence could have on our elections. Montana is a resource state. It's home to some of the richest natural resources in the country. And around the turn of the century, copper was king in Montana. Butte, Montana, was home to what was known as the richest hill on earth, which was a large deposit of minerals, and importantly, copper, which, as the nation was electrifying, that they needed a reliable source for that copper. And a lot of that copper that went into not only telephone lines and electrical lines, but also in ships and those sorts of things during World War One and Two later on. What we had was this massive industrial complex in Montana, this mining complex, that made a handful of people extremely rich. They were known as the Copper Barons. And one of those Copper Barons, when the United States Senate was formed, and Montana got its first senator, those senators at the time were chosen by the state legislatures, not by popular vote. And so William Clark literally bribed openly, paid off state legislators with bags of cash to send him to the United States Senate. And nobody wanted that. Nobody thought that was a good idea. It actually led to an amendment to the Constitution that made it so that we elect our senators by popular vote. But at the time, Montana voters took matters into their own hands and said, we don't want corporate entities buying off our politics. And so they passed in 1912 the Corrupt Practices Act by ballot initiative. And so the individuals in Montana came together and said, we are not going to allow corporate influence in our elections. We've seen what it does. And what we have in Montana now, one of the scars of that era, is this massive pit called the Berkeley Pit, which at one time was a giant open pit copper mine, and it now is full of toxic water right at the headwaters of the Columbia River, and it's basically impossible to clean up. And so corporate exploitation of resources run amok led us to a situation in which the public said, we are not going to allow corporations to buy off our politicians and allow this kind of thing to happen again.
And we see the open pit in the film Dark Money, and you point out, Kimberly, people point out in the film that in 1995, several hundred geese were confused in a storm and sought shelter in this body of water, and then they died. And then it happened right again toward the end of the film. Really, really awful to see. What's so interesting, Kimberly, is money in politics is nothing new. I mean, you point out, as John said, that at one time in Montana, every level of the state was dominated by corporate interests. So I think it's important to point out that this is not new. This has happened before.
Yeah, this has happened before. And, you know, Montana decided in 1912 with the Corrupt Practices Act that we weren't going to go back there. So to hear in 2010 that Citizens United was going to force everybody in the state to go back to this former system, which they had found corrupt, was it was pretty frustrating. But what you saw, because I don't want people to get too bummed out, what I think you see in Montana is the foundation for a lot of hope, and the fact that we can do something about this to reform our campaign finance system. And what happened in Montana starting in 2012, right, 100 years after this Corrupt Practices Act, you saw again by ballot initiative voters in Montana pass with about 75-80% approval one of the first ballot initiatives to instruct their elected officials to go back to Washington, D.C. and do everything they can to repeal Citizens United. So that was one thing. The other really important point that people need to consider is that, you know, there's always been money in politics, and frankly, there always will be money in politics. But one crucial thing that has changed recently with the kind of mobilization and perfection of these dark money groups to exploit this loophole is the fact that anonymous money has not always been a thing in politics. So to inject that into the system where a single individual or an organization or union can have this outsized impact that, you know, just drowns out the voice of the everyday voter, I think is really enraging to me personally. It just feels undemocratic with a small d. And what we show in the film is that it was also enraging to a lot of Republicans who were attacked by other Republicans, mostly in primary elections, mostly in safe districts, where they were just blindsided suddenly by a handful of people who were working with anonymous money and just had a really unfair outsized impact on the elections.
And we see that in California because we too are just – there's so many flyers that arrive in the mail. People get angry about it. They wonder – you know, who's paying for this? And in the case of Montana, you've got a story about what happened just 3 days before an election. There were a number of very ugly attack ads from various groups like Mothers Against Child Predators, which was not about mothers at all. It was two people sending flyers into a Catholic area, and it was very effective. And you interviewed a number of Republican politicians who said, the problem is these flyers arrive 3 days before the election, and there's just no time to respond to this.
Yeah, you just don't have any time to respond at all. And, you know, one of the first people to really start digging into this issue was a woman named Deborah Bonagofsky, who was defeated in a primary by the same group of people that were working together to attack Republicans that they didn't feel were pure enough. And I'm using air quotes around the word pure. But yeah, I think it's one of the things that has really led to a lot of polarization in the political discourse that we've been experiencing lately.
John, I know you have to leave us in about 10 minutes. I mean, you have done extensive reporting on the elections in Montana and trying to follow the money. And you got your hands on so many documents that just reveal how ugly this system really is. What do you think? I mean, our audience, we do shows about money and politics on a fairly regular basis. But what would you say really shocked you the most when you got your hands on some of these secretive documents?
Well, there were, during the course of time covered by the film, I would say there were probably three major sets of documents over the course of 5 or 6 years that were revealed, that taken together and kind of pieced together really unveiled the full scope of what was going on. And the first set of documents were these documents that showed up in a meth house in Colorado, of all places. Don't want to give too much away about that for viewers who are going to go see the film, but there's a pretty interesting twist in how these documents came to light. They made their way to Montana, and nobody really fully knew what to make of them. But what they were was two or three boxes, maybe four boxes, I can't recall, of detailed campaign materials that had the names of elected Montana officials, state legislators, all over them. They were attack mailers. They were pro. A lot of them were letters, including letters that were purported to be written by the wives of the candidates to people in that district, to voters in that district. And these were in Republican primary races. Everybody understood that there was something weird going on there, and that there was this outside group that was very actively involved in these campaigns, but nobody really fully understood what the full scope was until a second group of documents emerged during the course of a trial. Again, not to give too much away about the film, but a second set of documents that were obtained through the discovery process of trial that were internal emails from the organization that produced those first sets of documents. And so what we had were the work product in one set of documents, and in the second set of documents were the internal communications of those people who created that work product. And so what you ended up with was sort of this decoder ring of sorts that allowed us to really kind of fully see the operation. And then the third set of documents were emails that I obtained through the course of my reporting that indicated that there were sitting legislators who were, one of whom had his own dark money group, separate from the groups talked about in the film, but how they plan to use both this combination of electoral politics, redistricting, gerrymandering, and postcard votes, which are votes that lawmakers have to take on the floor of the House and the Senate, that will eventually end up being used as the basis for those really nasty attack mailers. And so, taken all together, what we saw was you had sitting elected officials, you had outside groups, and you had the internal employees. All of this information came together to show a really broad plot, if you will, to completely reshape Montana politics. And a lot of these folks who are funding this work were out-of-state groups whose primary goal is to end organized labor in the United States, the National Right to Work Committee. But that was not what the basis of these campaigns was. So voters didn't realize that these mailers that talked about abortion or talked about the death penalty or talked about gun rights or talked about, you know, anyone, taxes, the groups that were funding that had nothing to do with any of those issues. The groups who were funding that had one goal and one goal only, and that was to end labor organizations in the United States. Mm-hmm. So it was this bait and switch that nobody would have known about had these documents not been leaked or discovered or subpoenaed.
And we also learn how all of this works. So we're talking about Montana Senator Art Wittig, a Republican. And I don't want to also give too much away, but basically it boils down to this. If Art Wittig agreed to vote for those so-called right to work laws, in return, he would get consulting, mailers, website, postcards, what's called carpet bombing in the last few weeks before the election. So he would have a very well-funded, well-resourced organization just basically running his campaign, right? That's kind of what it boils down to?
Yeah, from out of state, essentially. That was what he was accused of, and that's what the jury is eventually found, was that he did illegally coordinate with these groups. So had with the other, so there's two issues here. There's disclosure, and then there's coordination. Disclosure is knowing who's funding these operations. Coordination is whether or not the candidate knows who's funding it and is actively working with that group in any way, shape, or form. So that's what we had going on in Montana, and eventually I think we had, was it, Kim, was it 12 or 11?
It was 14 candidates were ultimately found to have worked with them, but only 9 of them were prosecuted because the statute of limitations on 5 of those candidates had already run.
Kimberly Reed is a filmmaker and documentarian. Her new documentary is called Dark Money. John Adams is an investigative journalist and founder of the Montana Free Press. And Dark Money opens widely at the end of the month. You can find the trailer at yourcallradio.org. And I should say that we do air right outside of Billings, Montana. And so people in Montana will be hearing this show. And the film opens soon also in Montana, right, Kimberly?
Yeah, it's going to be August 10th. We're going to hit a bunch of the theaters in the state.
Okay, great. And John, we have to let you go soon, but I just want you to talk about a really interesting interview that you did with Montana State Representative Rob Cook and State Senator Lou Jones. They're both Republicans, and Montana has a really interesting citizen legislature. So people are teachers, social workers, farmers. They get paid when they're serving in the Capitol. It's 90 days. Is it every other year? Is that how it works?
That's right. Every other year, on odd number of years, these citizen legislators come from all over Montana, and they serve for, I think they make something like
$160 a day. Yeah,
it's not very much.
Hmm. So you had an interesting interview with these two Republicans, local Republicans, a state senator and a state representative, and they basically said Republicans want small government, more freedom, less taxes. I mean, we hear this all the time. And they said, but what does that mean? And one of them said, is it public schools? Are they going to defund public schools? Because if that's the case, I won't support that. He also said that extreme Republicans in Montana have started calling public schools government schools, and that if you do not vote the way the extreme Republicans want you to vote, then you're done. So it was interesting to really not hear from many Democrats in the film. We mostly heard from Republicans who say that extreme Republicans are coming in to, you know, get them out of the legislature.
Well, Montana is by and large a conservative state. I would say our politics certainly lean to the right. But from district to district, you know, they're really, these legislators are representing unique districts. You know, they can in some cases have completely different economies from the eastern part of the state to the western part of the state. They have unique challenges in their districts. And so these representatives are part of those communities. They've lived, a lot of times they've grown up in those communities, or their families have been in those communities for generations. And you know, the people they represent are their friends and their neighbors and their business owners in their communities, their schools, their hospitals, and those sorts of things. And so when you have sort of extreme ideological anti-government Republicans who don't want to pass a budget, who don't want to see public schools, who don't want to see federal Medicare and Medicaid dollars going to those local clinics, they turn around and they say, wait a minute. You know, I'm also for small government. I'm also for limited regulation, but I also know how important that health center is in my community. Montana is an extremely rural state, and some places you might have to travel hundreds of miles to get to the next nearest hospital if you don't have one of those rural health clinics in your community. And so those are heavily dependent on federal and state funding. And when they look around and they see that there is all of this money coming through, for instance, with the Affordable Care Act, money being made available to states to expand Medicaid, which will keep the doors open in a lot of these rural hospitals, that's something that they support. That money is going to be spent somewhere, and they believe that it should be spent in their communities. And so they were on board with expanding Medicaid in 2013, and that put them at odds with the more ideological members of their party who basically viewed them, you know, it used to be if you didn't agree with somebody on the vote, you respected the fact that they were voting on behalf of their constituents. Those rules have changed now in the modern era, And now it's more about ideological purity within the party for a lot of folks. And so that's what we're seeing. That's what we've seen happen in Montana is a shift to the right, as these outside groups have influenced these Republican primary races to the point where they've driven out a lot of the incumbent legislators, or just discouraged, more moderate Republicans from even running, because they don't want to take the risk of running in an election where they'll be bombarded with these horrible attack ads, comparing them to child predators and serial killers.
Right. And John, we're going to let you go in a minute, but one last question. I mean, this is happening across the country, the shift to the right and big, big money, dark money becoming darker. It's definitely happening at the federal level where, Republicans have moved so far to the right. What do you think about the media covering this? Because as so many people point out in the film, name the issue, education, the environment, abortion, so much of it is connected to money and politics. And the only way we can really change things is to ensure that we get money out of politics. But we need the media to follow the money.
Well, at the very least, if we're not going to get money out of politics, we at least have to know where it's coming from, so that voters can make a decision about whether or not they believe in the agenda of those outside groups who are spending so much money to influence them and their vote. I think getting rid of money in politics is a much longer battle. That's going to take a lot longer to do. But what we can do is we can push back against these disclosure rules and make sure that if we're going to have money in politics, that we at least know who's spending it. The Supreme Court never said anonymous, spending in elections is totally acceptable. What they said is corporate spending, and the rules have been changed, and the lack of enforcement is such that we do have unchecked, unaccountable, anonymous spending in our elections. And if we don't do something about it quickly, to answer your question about the media, we cannot rely on the Federal Election Commission or other election watchdogs to police this and make sure that the public's aware. And so we need a strong press. We need a strong media. We need a strong watchdog press that the public supports. And so my message to a lot of folks is, if this is something that troubles you, you better have a subscription to a local newspaper, or you better be subscribing to one of the many nonprofit, independent watchdog journalists who are out there doing everything they can to try to keep tabs on this stuff.
John Adams is an investigative journalist and founder of the Montana Free Press, an independent nonprofit news agency that provides news and analysis about Montana. John, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up after the break, we will talk about the Federal Elections Commission and learn more about how it works and why we can't rely on it to reveal dark money. Kimberly Reed is filmmaker and documentarian. Her new documentary, Dark Money, opens widely later next month. And if you are in the Bay Area, Kimberly will be at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco today at noon. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about how theater is tackling social issues at a time when facts have been undermined. We'll talk about the power of storytelling on stage. If there's any plays that you've seen recently that are based on actual events or based on journalism, we'd love to hear about it. You can email us, yourcall@kalw.org, or you can give us a call on tomorrow's show. And then Friday, it is our media roundtable. Today, we are talking about the new documentary, Dark Money. And Kimberly Reed is the filmmaker behind the film. It does an amazing job of really connecting the dots and looking at how Citizens United has affected states across the country. It'll open widely next month. You can see the trailer at yourcallradio.org. And if you're in the Bay Area, Kimberly Reed will be speaking at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco today at noon. And before we talk about the FEC, let's take a call. Let's go to Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I was wondering if Kimberly could address the background to how Citizens United was able to pass, meaning the cases that more or less naturally led up to it, like Buckley versus Vallejo, and the stream of cases that made Citizens United a natural culmination.
All right, thanks, Ruthann. Kimberly?
Yeah, that goes pretty deep into a long history of two strands of Supreme Court jurisprudence. I'm not an expert in those, so I'm not going to pretend to give you the whole history of these. But those two strands that you really have to look at are corporate personhood and a whole background of corporate law that has there's actually a pretty long history of, you know, considering corporations to have the same rights as persons under the law. The other strand of it that you look at is money and how money is making its way into spending. The Buckley v. Vallejo case in 1976 that she just mentioned had to do, actually, I think it was the brother of William F. Buckley who wanted to run for office. And the real gist of that decision is that the federal government could not constrain this person, who was rather well off, could not constrain the amount of money that he could spend of his own money in a political campaign. So that took the lid off of what were some campaign finance contribution limits that were in place before that. So, you know, all of this is there's a lot of debate about to what extent corporations should be considered persons, to what extent we should have limits in what corporations or individuals or unions are giving in our elections, that they're contributing. But there's two presumptions that are always made, and they're the presumptions that John actually mentioned earlier. It goes back to disclosure and knowing where this money is coming from, and it goes to coordination and the fact that if money is going to be spent in an election, and if that's going to be spent independent of a candidate, meaning that money is now, since Citizens United, going to be unlimited, that if those two things are going to be taken for granted, what you have to look at is just kind of take a step back from those Supreme Court debates and where we got with Citizens United and just look at the way the system is functioning. Because even in Citizens United, the whole decision is based on those two presuppositions, that we're going to know where the money is coming from and that these expenditures, this spending, is not going to be coordinated between candidates and the people who are coming up with the money. Neither of those things are happening. Neither of those presumptions of Citizens United are being fulfilled. We don't know where the money is coming from with these 501c4 groups. And we also see time and time again when we get accidental disclosures or flip on a light switch and see all sorts of coordination going on, which we illustrate in the film and a couple of different examples in different states. We see that coordination is going on all the time. So to get back kind of directly to what the caller's question is, which you know, may have an underpinning of like, well, it's really goes back to all this other campaign finance law that sort of led us where we are. How could we possibly avoid Citizens United? I may be reading a little bit into that question. But I would just say to that even within Citizens United, even with that being the law of the land, even with the Supreme Court that we have sitting today or that will be sitting in, you know, the coming months, that even given all of those constraints, that there are a lot of regulations that are in place that are not being fulfilled, and that all goes back to disclosure and whether or not these expenditures are being coordinated.
And Kimberly, I notice that when we talk about dark money, people tend to talk about the Koch brothers and unions in the same sentence, as if they're spending the same amount. In 2014, Republic Report found that the Koch brothers spend more than double the top 10 unions combined. And in 2014, Talking Points memo found that conservative groups that don't disclose their donors spent more than $94 million, while liberal dark money groups spent more than $28 million. Do you have any updated information on this, if you compare dark money groups on the right and dark money groups on the left?
No, I mean, those numbers are pretty current. Unfortunately, it takes a long time for those numbers to come tumbling in, because we always have to wait a while for the reports to come through the IRS, which is, to kind of get back where we started, why it's especially troubling that some of those IRS rules and regulations are now on the chopping block, at least. We're going to see what happens to it. The other thing, it's important to recognize that both the right and the left benefit from some dark money spending, but I don't want to create a false equivalency, because there's vastly more that happens on the right. And the figures that you were just mentioning had to do with Koch brothers spending. If you add in everything else, the most accurate figure I've seen recently is getting more to the verge of 8 to 10 times as much spending on the political right as you see on the political left. So that's, I don't want to create this false equivalency. And the other important point is that, especially at the federal level — this is a little bit different at the state level — but at the federal level, you see dark money groups intentionally weaponized by the Republican leadership on the right. And you see him applauding, Mitch McConnell applauding the results of Mnuchin's IRS rule changes a couple days ago. You see time and again in the last 3 or 4 years of the Obama administration, you saw poison pills that were really embedded in spending bills every time it came around, that would prevent any sort of modifications of IRS rules and regulations, so that these, regulations against dark money groups could be put in place. So, there really is a very clear concerted effort on the part of Republican leadership in D.C. To keep this avenue open, for the political right, because it's being weaponized as such. And there's also another thing that I think you have to consider. And there, I mean, I would like, let's just put it this way. There are plenty of examples where dark money spending is pulling candidates further to the right, because of the demands of, getting through a primary in a safe district, and the way that this dark money spending is working. That's something that we portray in the film. I would like for somebody to show me examples of candidates in primary elections of Democrats being pulled farther to the left. I welcome that. I really do welcome it, because a lot of times you have to look at the, where's the profit motive? Again, we're kind of back to what John Adams was doing. I had such a good time following John and following along with him. Because when you follow that money, it tells you a lot about what people's motivations really are when they're trying to play in elections.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Planned Parenthood, the right tends to say that, Planned Parenthood owns Democrats. Well, they're trying to provide health care to women. I mean, that you can't argue that. That's what they're doing. They're not in a for-profit venture. But, the media tends to say that you have Tom Steyer on the left and David Koch on the right. But we've gone over that many times on the show.
Yeah.
You also talk about foreign money. And right now, a number of outlets are asking the question, the NRA spent $30 million to elect Donald Trump. Is some of that Russian money? What did you learn about foreign money in all of this?
A big, huge question mark, frankly, is what we ended up with. I mean, we kind of tell the story about money and politics using this microcosm in Montana. And as far as we could tell, there wasn't any foreign money. But that was also focusing on the 2010 election in a state that's got a million people in it. When you start considering how much more sophisticated dark money spending has gotten since this example that we were looking at, when you look at everything that happened I think it's pretty undeniable that there was some influence. The question is how much. And when you look at the response to it with these IRS rule changes, there's no other way to look at them other than that the scrutiny is going to be removed, that the sunlight is going to be removed, and that it's going to make these dark money spending even darker. It's going to make these rules and regulations even harder to enforce. It's bad enough as it is at the federal level with enforcement. But this is going to make it even more difficult. So, how do we track the foreign money? I mean, that's the big, huge question that we see these days. The other thing I would point out that I think tends to get, lost in the mix of everything that's going on is think back. Oof, I'm going to get the date a little bit wrong, but I think it's about 6-8 weeks ago that President Trump pardoned Dinesh D'Souza for the campaign finance violations that he pled guilty to. I mean, he admitted his own guilt and was then pardoned. So I think if you take a look at this kind of IRS rule change proposition, which Governor Bullock in Montana is filing suit against the IRS to overturn, and when you pair that with what seems like an indication that these campaign finance violations are not going to be, taken seriously by the Trump administration. I think it makes it more important than ever to hold our elected officials accountable for campaign finance, for being able to follow, as much as possible of the money that goes into these elections.
And if you missed the beginning of the show, just a reminder, on Monday, the IRS announced that nonprofit advocacy groups no longer have to identify their biggest donors to the IRS. And the governor of Montana, who is featured in the film Dark Money, Steve Bullock, sued the Trump administration over this change. We have an email about this change from a Nicholas who says, why not call this what it really is, money laundering? The proposed IRS rule change would create a perfect vehicle for recharacterizing money from any source that you or I would easily identify as a potent political actor into contributions from innocent-sounding nonprofits. Recharacterizing money this way is called money laundering.
Yeah, that's a phrase I often use. I don't think I've used it during this interview, but it seems like precisely what's going on. Mm-hmm. Right when Citizens United came down in 2010, 2012 election cycles, you can tell I've been working on this film for a while. a lot of people were talking not really about the problems with dark money. They were talking about the impact that corporations were going to have on super PACs. And there was kind of a distinction between, super PACs having unlimited money, but having to disclose who their donors are, and then dark money groups having unlimited money, but not having to disclose who their donors are. Sometimes there's a little bit more restrictions on how you can actually spend that money in a campaign. So it's a little bit more convenient for campaigns to keep unlimited money in super PACs instead of in dark money groups. But what really you saw happening in the 14 and 16 election cycles more and more, was really eradicating the difference between dark money groups and super PACs, because if you wanted to anonymize the money, if you wanted to launder the money, all you would do is give to a super PAC, would give your money to a 501c4 dark money group, then making it anonymous, right? Laundering the money there. And then the dark money group makes a contribution in the same amount to a super PAC. You know, the FEC says, you know, where did that big donation come from? And all you have to say if you're running the super PAC is, well, it came from the dark money group. And if IRS says, where did that money come from? You say, I don't have to tell you because it came from a dark money group. So this whole distinction and this whole between super PACs and dark money groups is really lessened. And the ability to launder money back and forth between dark money groups and super PACs is it's a loophole that has really been, you know, they've perfected all of the techniques in dealing with ways to launder money.
Kimberly, we have just a couple minutes left. Kimberly Reed is a filmmaker and documentarian. The new documentary Dark Money is out widely next month, and I hope you can see it because it does a great job of really connecting the dots. We have 5 minutes left, and I have two more things I want to ask you about. A number of people you interviewed in your film said, when you look at these corporations, these nonprofits that so many of us have never heard of, they have been doing an amazing job of capturing state legislatures. They have also really captured the Supreme Court. And, for example, the Judicial Crisis Network spent more than $10 million on the campaign to support Justice Gorsuch, and they were wildly successful over that. But people pointed out in your film that big money cannot control the government without the courts. They still need state appellate courts because so many judgments rendered affecting corporations, polluters, and so many other crucial issues are made in the Supreme Courts of the states. And the big money people know that unless they get control of those courts, they can't control those issues and those decisions.
Yeah, I think the way our film is structured is I think it unspools is sort of a mystery novel, the spy novel. We're following the money right through the eyes of John, who you heard from earlier in the hour, John Adams as our investigative reporter who's showing us the way. And there are a couple, I think, kind of scary moments in the editing room with our editor, J. Arthur Starenberg. We kind of referred to him as the, you know, don't go into the basement moments. And those really, the parts that I think are the scariest to people who haven't spent a lot of time thinking about these issues are the parts having to do with the courts. Because when you start imagining, and a lot of us kind of assume that, you know, politicians and candidates for office are always awash in money, and they're to a certain extent, a lot of them are influenced by it. And, you know, there's a bit of crookedness going on. And I think that that's wrong. I think that there are some good politicians out there. But that's generally how a lot of people think about politics. But most people think that judges are above and beyond all of that. And when people realize that, oh, in states where judges are elected and this money is, you know, affecting their elections, and all of a sudden we have a ton of unlimited money being spent, that's a very different story than, you know, candidate elections for somebody running for the state house. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's really important to consider, the Brennan Center for Justice has done some interesting studies on this, is that you can track the money being spent in elections, and it will influence the way that judges rule. If a judge is sitting on the bench and deciding what sentence is going to come down and how harsh this is going to be, judges rule much more harshly when an election is coming up, especially if there's more money being spent. Now, if you consider that money is anonymous on top of everything else, You know, one really important thing that judges need to consider is, you know, whether there's a vested interest and whether they should recuse themselves from a case usually involving business interests. And if the judge is the only one who knows that these business interests are involved in this dark money group, how are they going to recuse themselves? They may not even know that they should be recusing themselves, but, you know, because we're not sure who's behind the money. So, yeah, the impact of dark money in these judicial elections is, I think, particularly urgent. And one last thing that I'll just toss out there for folks. We're also seeing anonymous dark money spending moving outside of candidate elections into just issues, right? We have a scene in the film where some voters get kind of disgusted with a town hall meeting, which was all about Medicaid expansion in the state of Montana. So they weren't trying to get a candidate elected or, you know, unelected. They were trying to influence the vote of a candidate who had another 3 years in their term. So we're starting to see it move issue by issue by issue, vote by vote by vote.
And that what was amazing about that is he was not invited to a town hall about his own legislation. And when he showed up, he wasn't allowed to come in.
Yeah, they wouldn't let him speak. And what you saw was just a bunch of you know, disgusted voters standing up and walking out.
Yeah, I mean, it is so important to note that in so many polls, 70% of the population wants Citizens United overturned and they want money out of politics. Kimberly Reed is a filmmaker and documentarian. Her new documentary is called Dark Money, and it does an incredible job of really connecting the dots, looking at how Citizens United has really affected state legislatures across the country. And she has incredible footage of what goes on really behind the scenes. And I hope you can see the film. It opens widely next month. And if you're in San Francisco, Kimberly will be speaking today at the Commonwealth Club at noon. Kimberly, thank you so much for all of your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. And you can watch the trailer at yourcallradio.org. We will definitely continue to follow the money on Your Call. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.